I'm Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to share at this meeting. I think I went to this meeting when it was in person. I would go to this meeting it was like the upper echelon of like alcoholics, you know, because I got sober at the Late Show. And at the Late Show, you get like, you know, people that just got out of jail, and you get like the unsheltered folks from the streets, and you get like, you know, just rough and tumble people. And then I remember every once in a while someone would put me in a car and drive me to the North Oakland doublespeaker, and it was like we drove in a vehicle to this meeting, and we live in a high class life. But that's, you know, where my drinking took me, you know, so it was like a big deal for me. Someone put me in their motor vehicle and take me to a meeting. But that's where things started was, you know, I was drinking in high school, same usual stuff, partying with my friends, kind of just fitting in and all that stuff. But, always very extreme, you know, loud, drinking too much. It was always, how do I explain it? It was always kind of like trying to reach the correct level, you know, like how do I like achieve the correct level of intoxication in order to function, in order to laugh and make jokes and socialize and all that stuff. It was never like, you know, have a beer with my friends and be done. It was like, if I drink 8 of these, or if I drink 10 of these, then I can, you know, have a good time or whatever. It was always the word for that, where it's reliant upon the amount. Like the fun I was going to have was reliant upon the amount that I was going to drink. And if I didn't have the alcohol, like I remember at one point, I had a girlfriend, and she was very aware of my alcoholism, and she would take the bottle and she'd put it in the kitchen, you know, and be like, we're going to leave this over here, and you're going to have like one cup of wine or something. And I'd be like, yes, I'm going to have one cup of wine, like no problem. And the entire fucking night I would scheme of ways to get into the kitchen. And once I would, you know, just pound the wine. You'd be like, where did the wine go? And like, that was near the end. But, I was always, you know, I was always kind of, going overboard with stuff like that. My drinking did lead me. I got the DUI. You know, I've been to psych hospitals. I was stealing cough medicine one night. I was addicted to alcohol. I'm not going to talk. I was a drug abuser too. So if you did drugs, you're still welcome. But I'm not going to talk about that because alcoholism was the constant. And psychiatric hospitals, DUIs, jail visits, overnights, you know, crimes, etc. And I was really bad. I was thinking today, I spoke with my mom today. One of my living amends, which is our 8th step once we get sober, an 8th and 9th step. One of my living amends is to be available for my mom. And I talk to her, and what happens is every once in a while I get these flashes of things that I've done to my mother when I was drinking, you know? And I had this recollection of one night, her taking me to this parking lot, and I said, oh, my friend has my sweatshirt. And I made her wait there for like an hour while I ran around and did my fucking thing, you know? And then came back. And I think, just stuff like that was, you know, normal for me. You know, it was like just taking advantage of people. And it's just not a very fun person to be around. But I was happy to hear when someone said they had 60-some days and they came back and they had 2 days. That's great. I'm happy that you're coming back. Because I'll tell you, when I started going to rehab about 8 or 9 years ago. And when I started going, my thing was, is I would go, I'd go to a treatment center. They'd either send me off or I'd be at the outpatient center, and I'd get about a week. and I'd be saying all the right things and doing all the right things, but I would go out on the weekends and I would be either smoking pot or drinking and kind of fibbing the tests and fibbing the people around me. And I remember for a long time that I thought that that was what was going to make me, I thought that was what was going to make me happy. And the whole time people were saying, you know, it's not, we're not doing this like as a way to like take away your happiness. We're doing this as a way to give you a new way of life. So I totally relate to like, that feeling of relapsing and kind of being down on yourself and all that stuff. And not knowing if it's for me, I'll speak for myself. I'm trying not to speak for someone. I didn't know if it was something I wanted to do. And at some point I came back for long enough that like, you know, the miracle started happening. They say like the magic starts happening where you start having more fun sober than you ever did when you were drinking. And you just like, when, you know, when you wake up, like I remember for a long time, for about like the first 6 months or 8 months, I would wake up and I'd have this feeling of terror, you know, every morning that I woke up sober. It was like, holy fuck. Like, I can't believe this is happening. This is so fucked up. And I was having nightmares. I was having drinking dreams. I was doing all that stuff. And people kept saying, you know, keep coming back. You just keep coming back, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. And the other thing I'd say is like, this too shall pass. So, you know, that feeling of terror slowly left. And as I started finding more of a home in AA and getting around people that were kind of more uplifting and were trying to just help me to be a more sober, thank you, individual, those feelings of terror and the negative experiences were getting fewer and further between. And I was putting more and more distances from people that affected me negatively, you know, and I still have that. People call me every once in a while. I just get a bad feeling, you know, cause they're out drinking and smoking and all that stuff. And it's like, even now I want to say, you know what? I'm good. It's okay. I'm not worried about it, but I'm one of those people that, you know, it's like, I just, certain folks, man, I have a hard time with it, you know, and I'm like, you know, why am I going to risk it? You know, it's not to say that I never do, you know, I'm not like, I just am one of those people that I'm like, if I get the thing, that feeling where something's a threat to my recovery, you know, where I'm like, this is a constant, like I've tried with this person, they continue to feel like a threat to my recovery. And then I have to say, you know what, I'm going to excuse myself from this relationship and hopefully they'll be understanding, you know? So I still do that. So just to qualify, I've been sober for 5.5 years, 5 3/4. My sobriety birthday is in July. So I've got the same sponsor the whole time. I've worked the steps 2 or 3 times. My sponsor, 3 guys. One of them's in San Quentin, sponsoring a guy in San Quentin. That's interesting, you know. So, a jailbirds, you know. But there's room for everyone, right? It's like, you know, like I said, like people putting me in a car was a big deal. Like I was like, we're riding in the car today, you know. Like that was fun for me because that's just where I went with my drinking, you know. And I know other people that like, you know, I have friends that owned houses and fucking worked. You know, running companies and shit. And it's great because like we can still be buddies. And the great thing is that it gave me a chance to fit in a normal society, right? Like I can hold a job now. I can, you know, hopefully share to a newcomer. I can, you know, afford things I need to afford and can do what I need to do to be relatively content in a world that I didn't fit into at one point or that I felt so other than. But yeah, pretty much I'm just happy to be here. And I'm one of those keep coming back people, right? Like sometimes that's all we can do. You know, some days are better than others and just thanks for listening to me. And that's it.
My name's Deborah, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm actually an addict too. I never thought of myself as an addict until recently. My sobriety date is December 4th, 1985. So I have 36 years of sobriety and I have no idea how that happened. I was one of those flower child, generation people. And so, you know, and so I did drugs. I didn't even think about it that I did. I mean, I did everything, acid and cocaine and all the pot, but alcohol definitely was my love. And so, I've just always considered myself an alcoholic. And I just realized recently that I'm also an addict, a drug addict, but I'm also addicted to other things. And I've discovered that. And I'll tell you, that's part of my discoveries once I got sober. What happened, what it's like now. It doesn't matter how many times or how much sobriety you have. This is nerve-wracking. I was told the very first time I shared, don't think about it, you know? And then, so I try not to think about it, but then when the time comes, I go, oh no, I should have done homework. I should have prepared. I don't think there's a right or wrong way, but what I do is I just pray to God to help me to get out of my own way. When I grew up, I was the oldest daughter of my mom is full-blooded Filipino and she was very Catholic. And so she was very strict, very controlling. And she had her own ideas about how she had me out of wedlock. So of course she didn't want that to happen to me. So she was very controlling with me. And I was, of course, one of my other addictions is boys. I was always boy crazy. And so my mom was so strict that I didn't even drink. I was a very late bloomer in my drinking. I didn't start drinking until I got out of high school. And I was a cheerleader. I mean, I knew all those cheerleader people were out and football players were out drinking and having a party. But I was so afraid of my mother. I didn't do, and I lived in a house that, in fact, Austin's at that house, the house I grew up in. My father had a full bar, and I never drank one sip out of that whole bar because I was so afraid of the wrath of my mother. And there's the kind of thing when I was a kid, and if I was out playing, I was being a kid playing, and my mom would call me, and if I didn't hear her, and I would, then I'd come in, and she would whip me with the belt, you know, and so. I was afraid of my mother, and it was only a few years back when I realized, you know, my father was out to sea. He was a marine engineer, so he was always gone. I saw him maybe for 2 weeks out of every 3 months or something. So I didn't have a father figure, you know, and I had my mother who had to work full time, raise us kids, cook dinner. And do everything. And now I think, oh my God, how did my mother do that? No wonder she was impatient with me. And, you know, but anyway, I thought she wanted me to think and say, of course, that meant I didn't have much of an opinion. It's like, whatever you thought is, yeah, that's what I think. That sounds good. And I didn't ever question authority. I always thought authority was right and I was wrong. So that's just how I went through life. I didn't have self-esteem. I didn't have self-worth because of course I couldn't do anything right, in my mom's eyes, or that's how I perceived it. I don't know if that's true, but that's how I perceived it. Even to the point where when people would give me a compliment, she would say, don't tell her that. And so what that did to my psyche was that there's just no self-worth, you know? And so, then when I discovered alcohol, I met this guy. My first job out of high school was like Taco Bell. And the first time I had a drink, my boss, who was not that old, you know, she was my boss and I kind of hung out with her, and she would take these white, this whole pie, handful of these whites and pound them down. She was so addicted. And she hooked me up with this guy one night. And I remember walking around, and you know, I didn't even realize this until like just a few years back. She actually pimped me out. I'm not sure. I'm sure she got something by, because she dropped me off with this guy, and then he picked me up in the morning, and
Deborah, I accidentally
We muted you by accident. Can you unmute yourself or?
Okay.
Sorry.
So anyway, so this guy's going to have a party, and you know, and I'm his, the girl that he's got, and I had never had a drink yet. So I drank that night, and I got so, I don't even remember anything. I got so shit faced. And all I remember was throwing up, hugging the toilet bowl, throwing up, and then waking up in his bed. That was my first drink. And, I don't think he took advantage of me. I was probably pretty disgusting. I mean, just threw up all, you know. But anyway, that was my first drink. And then I met another man. Then I met a man when I worked at Taco Bell, and he kind of stole me away from home. And he was like 5 years older than me. He introduced me to drinks and drugs and all that. That was the hippie days. And there we were, drinking and drugging. And what alcohol did for me was, I remember drinking in this bar in a strip mall. Not in a strip mall. It was in a shopping mall. And I had to go out to the car to get something. And I remember running through, I used to drink like Harvey Wallbangers. I remember running through this parking lot. And back in those days, there was this commercial. It was a shampoo commercial, Breck shampoo. And this woman she was tall and blonde. It had long, silky hair. And she was running slow motion through this field. And that is, you know, a meadow. And that was what alcohol, I felt like that person. Tall and thin and pretty and confident. And here I am, this short little, I'm like 4'11". I'm running through this parking lot on this asphalt to my car. But I'm feeling pretty and smart and just, it just made me feel like a feeling I had never felt in my life. And so that was it. I was off and running. So I was with this man for about 8 years. And he was very abusive. He abused me emotionally and he abused me physically. He would beat me and I'd have bruises. And what happened was I jumped from my mother's little nest of her telling me what to say and do to his little nest of him telling me what to say and do. And I there I was in this relationship, and I thought it was pretty good. Anyway, so I was with that man for 8 years, and then he would say things to me like, "If you ever leave me," he didn't want me to leave. First of all, he would say, I want to just lock you up in my safety deposit box. He was so afraid of me being out in public because he's afraid that I would be tempted by somebody. Somebody would tempt me and I would leave him or he would lose me or whatever. So he would say things to me like, if you ever leave me, I will find you and whoever you're with. He goes, and I know where your family is. And so I come from a place of fear. I went from, you know, being absolutely so fearful of my mother to being absolutely, I mean, that was how he had this hold on me. And then, he would do stupid things like fall out of the closet when he thought I was leaving him with a gun in one hand and pills in another hand. I mean, it was very dramatic. It was a very dramatic life. But then I managed to get away from him. I just went, you know, made a decision. I was going to get my truck and get, one day when he was at work, I was going to get in my car and go live by myself in Lake Tahoe or something. I lived in LA at the time, but it was weird because he kind of just walked out of my life right about then. He no longer had a power over me once I made that decision. But so there I was, single. For the first time in my life, I didn't have a mother. I didn't have a boyfriend. No one could tell me what to do. And I just soared. My drinking just, I felt free. I felt, oh my God. And I was in the bar business. So, I mean, it didn't seem like I drank a lot because I hung out with people that drank as much or more than I did. And I just drank. I could drink a lot, actually. And I mean, I would do things like I lived in like the Carmel, Monterey area. And I remember like, and there's this strip of plants in the middle of Carmel, which on a Saturday night is packed with tourists and people, local people and tourists. And I would go to the bathroom right in the middle of the that little thing in the middle of the two-lane street. I would do things like that. And I would drink and I would drive. And I hung out with people that drank. My girlfriends and I remember there were about 8 or 10 of us went out to dinner out in Carmel Valley. And in this restaurant, we didn't order a glass of wine. We each ordered our own bottle of wine. So I have a picture of us with all of us with our bottle of wine, bows on our heads, and then a big old fat doobie at the end that we, you know, shared with the owner, and they locked the door. And it's like, and then we all drove home, you know, 30, 40 minutes home. So, you know, that was pretty scary to me. I have a lot of people in my life that died from, because I was a bar drinker. I just was a partier. I was a social butterfly is what I thought I was. But I lost friends, though, like one drunk friend walked across the street on a red light in the middle of the night, 2 or 3 in the morning, and got killed by a car. And I have another friend who got killed in a motorcycle accident while drunk. Thank God the girl that was with him made it up, because she's now my sponsee. Well, she's not a sponsee, but she's anymore, because she lives in Monterey and I live in Washington State. And I have a lot of friends who have OD'd. And so I don't know how I managed to come out. I don't know. So one of the things that happened, I worked for a bar. This bar that had 3 restaurants in Monterey, Carmel, and in Monterey and Carmel, and they gave us this party out in Carmel Valley, and it was, the booze was flowing, free booze, free food, and I got so drunk at this party, and my boyfriend and I were getting ready to come home. I was going to drive. I was driving, and so she takes my key away from me, puts her arm around my boyfriend, and starts to walk away. And that pissed me off. She's walking her arms around my boyfriend, and she didn't know I had a spare key in my purse. So I get my spare key and I turn on the engine, and she sticks her head in the window. She goes, Deborah, stop. And I said, get the fuck out of my face. And I torqued out of there and I drove home, which was probably about 30 or 40 minute drive home. And this was before cell phones. I get home. My boyfriend calls me. He's drunk as a skunk. He says, come pick me up. So I drive, and this is on a curvy road. I drive all the way back, pick him up, and then I drive us both all the way home. So that next day, I was like, oh my God, what did I do? And I went on the wagon. It's the only time, I mean, I never tried to stop. So I went on the wagon. And then I had this girlfriend, and so I was working at the bar. I was a cocktail waitress at the time. I was a friend who used to drink, and then she got into AA, and she was sober. So this one time in the middle of me, it was like 2 weeks into my being on the wagon, she stopped by the bar to say hi to us, because we're all friends, you know. And I said, Debbie, guess what? I haven't had a drink for like 2 weeks. And she says, you know what, Deborah? Normal people don't have to go on the wagon. And that was like a light bulb moment for me. But it didn't make me stop. But she was the one that I called when I really got sick and tired of being sick and tired. But before that happened, I had a boyfriend. I don't remember timelines. But anyway, there was this one time part of my life where I had a boyfriend who, he was a bartender, and he had lost his job because of his drinking. And it was around Christmas time, he committed suicide. He couldn't get a job because of his drinking. He'd sit at a bar drinking, and then try to get a job as a bartender. So he commits suicide. And I'm thinking, was it my fault that he did that? And so I ended up picking up the book called Under the Influence. And in that book, Under the Influence, is where it explains the different stages of alcoholism. And I saw that he was like late stages alcoholic, but I saw that I was in mid stages alcoholic. And it was like, ooh. And it talked about blackouts. I was a blackout drinker. I mean, the fact I thought, well, I couldn't remember what happened. I'd go out and I'd spend all my tips, exactly the amount of money I had. And I would think, how did I do that? How did I spend the exact amount of money that I had? And, you know, things like that. And then, so I read that book and just like the book says, I remember sitting in the bathtub with my wine, drinking this book about alcohol. And I put the book down when I was finished. And I said, well, surely that is denial. Surely that doesn't pertain to me. And so I continued to drink a little more after that. And so, but then it got to a point where physically I couldn't handle my alcohol. I was scared to death. My fear, you know, me being fear, being I'm so afraid. I had to be a good girl, right? I so afraid I'd get a DUI because I drank. I worked until 2 o'clock in the morning. We sat in the back and drank and did our lines and stuff in the corner, and then I'd drive home every night. And I knew I'd get a DUI. And what I was really afraid of was that I would kill somebody with my car, and that was what I had the most fear about. Or getting in an accident and becoming like a paraplegic kind of a thing, and someone having to take care of me, you know, not wanting to put any. So that was a huge fear because I drank and drove every single night because I was a cocktail waitress, and I couldn't not do that, you know. And I'd try to drive home, and my car would go into the bar that was right down the block from my house, and I was just, it was like I couldn't control anything. I was so out of control. And but physically I couldn't handle it. My hangovers were getting so bad. It was just, it was awful. And so, one day I called my friend, the one who, was sober, and she took me to an AA meeting. And I remember this, my first AA meeting was like this, it's in Pacific Grove. It's this long, it was in a church. It was long, seemed like it was a long tables, an old man. There was all this smoke in the room, and the topic was sponsorship. I did not relate to a person, a thing. I didn't relate to anything about it. But women came up to me after the meeting, and someone handed me a big book. One of my friends that I worked with, she told me, read the stories in the back. So, and someone gave me a schedule and circled a women's meeting on it. And so I went to that next Wednesday night women's meeting. And my intention wasn't to quit drinking. My intention was to learn to control my drinking, you know, kind of like drink more like a lady kind of a thing. And then at this Wednesday night meeting, this woman was celebrating 1 year. And I thought, she hasn't had a drink for a year. And of course, my ego, I says, well, if she can do it, I can do it. And so, you know, there I am, just, and I did what they suggested. I was one of those people, I was so into self-help. I would read every self-help book you could possibly think of. And so, this, I mean, I was like a sponge when I walked into the doors of AA. I was learning things I had, you know, learning about life is what I was learning. And I was like, I was like on a pink cloud. I was like a sponge. I would sit with my wine glass full of water and drink, and I'd read the big book, and I'd read Living Sober, and I'd read the literature, and I would read. And, you know, with the big book, I read the big book through like one time back then. After that, the only time I would use the big book was if I feel like I needed, you know, solution or an answer from God, I would open up the book and see what God had to tell me that day. That's how I used the big book for a long time. But now today I use the big book very regularly. In fact, I was looking at, this is my big book. It's a big, big book. And I didn't realize it, but I'm very organized. You know, it tells me, I have these little stickies. It tells me what step, you know, through and how it works. And I'm not organized to think, oh, I'm going to read this chapter and highlight stuff. But I have sponsees that come over. I have two sponsees that come over once a week, and we read from the big book. I have a big book study. I try to go to a big book study, and my home group was a 12x12 study. And so, this book, It's pretty amazing. I thought it was pretty boring, but Father Tom Weston, you guys, I'm sure you guys know him. He lives in Oakland, but I go to my sponsor when I first got sober. She introduced me to Father Tom Weston retreats that he has them in a lot of places, but I went to Santa Cruz quite a bit, and he always uses the big book, you know, to get his, what he's going to talk about. And so, you know, I see my Into Action chapter and my How It Works chapter are like, there are so many little remarks and little highlights. And, but I, you know, being the good girl that I am, I always did what was suggested. I got myself a really good sponsor. She so depends on God. I mean, I would watch her. I always believed in God because I was Catholic. You know, I brought up Catholic. And I think I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous is because I would pray in the morning when I was drunk and hungover and couldn't remember what I'd done the night before. And I would pray to God to help me not to drink that night. And I mean, it didn't happen for a long time. But in God's time, I guess when I was ready, something clicked and God answered my prayers. So, but anyway, I ended up with a sponsor who, so depended on God, and I would watch her. It seemed like her life would be falling apart, but she always managed to, she would always say, God will take care of me. God will. And I would think, God, she sure is sure that God's going to take, and God always did. And I would, and so I feel like my foundation of my program is so dependent on God, and I'm grateful for that. And so I do what's suggested. I read, you know, I go to meetings so where I'm forced to read the big book because on my own, I don't really do it. And one thing that's really good when I'm asked to share or pick a topic for a meeting, I can't stand to do it, but it makes me read. It makes me read. And I find some really good stuff, you know, even though I hear it over and over again, it's like, things just, when I need to hear something, it just pops out at me. Words, I could read it 1,000 times, but I don't really hear it until I need to. And so today I have a boyfriend who has, I'm engaged actually, a fiance who has 46 years of sobriety. And it's really exciting. When I first came into AA, I discovered I had other addictions. I went to Debtors Anonymous. I went to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. I was always looking for love in all the wrong places. And I'd gone to Overeaters Anonymous. I would use food. And so I had a husband that passed away 3 years ago, and he was a normie. I guess he was a normie. He was a pot smoker, but it didn't bother me. I got sober working in a bar. So I was always around that sort of thing. But, He taught me how to, I had like $10,000 credit card debt when I met him, and he helped me get out of debt and taught me how to live within my means. And I got a job at the Postal Service and ended up, you know, with this portfolio. Today I have and I don't know how these things happen. When I first got sober, I just thought about this recently. I had there's this couple who was in the program, and they came over to my house one time. I mean, I probably wasn't even a year sober, and they sat in my living room and helped me with my taxes, and they decided that I should have $100 a month come out and go into the beginning of a portfolio. And between that and then meeting the guy who I ended up marrying, I was married to him for 25 years. We were together 26 years. And it was the first time in my life I picked a good man, you know, someone who treated me well, loved me to death. And he just was a decent man. And but he taught me how to live within my means. And today I have a very comfortable life because of it. And that's the same kind of thing. It's just, how did this happen to me? I don't know, but I'm grateful. All I know is I'm grateful. But now I have a boyfriend, a fiance who is 46 years sober, and it's amazing. We talk the same language. We have the same interests. He teaches me like a queen, just like my husband did. But with him, he he can call me on my shit is the thing, because he knows about character defects. So he can point them out to me, you know, whereas my normie husband just thought I could do no wrong. And this guy can point out my character defects. So, yeah, I've been through the steps, and I do the steps. The program works me. You know, I went through the steps probably a couple times front to back, but now I use the steps when I need, resentment, the whole resentment thing I learned about. I show up at meetings and I hear what I need to hear. It was at a meeting when I had a bad resentment about my boss at the post office, to the point where she was making my head crazy. I was giving her this power and I couldn't think straight, and I hated her. And I don't hate people, but I hated her. She was evil and I couldn't think straight. And I'd put my Father Tom tapes on to just try to go somewhere else. And I find myself at a meeting and the topic was on resentment. And I heard about that story in the big book, Freedom from Bondage. And that story tells you, when you have a resentment, you pray for that person every day for 2 weeks straight to be happy, joyous, and free. And I could not do that. But I tried. So what I did was I spent 2 weeks praying for the willingness to pray for her to be happy, joyous, and free. And so then, thank you. And so eventually I was able to pray for her and really mean it for her. And then I was like this ice, you know, I can't. And then as I prayed, it was like the ice would melt and I softened and I started having an empathy for her, thinking, why is she like that? I haven't walked in her shoes. I don't know why she's the way she is. She was, and so it's a miracle. That's one of those miracles, you know, that we get in the program. So I totally changed my attitude toward her, and she no longer, but so whenever I have a sponsee that has a resentment, I can, from my experience, I know, say, I can tell them to read that story, Freedom from Bondage. And so anyway, the big book, the answers are here. You know, there is a solution. There's a solution, and it's right here in this book. So anyway, and I have the people in my life are in the program. The people in my life, most of them, I have some normie friends, and my normie friends are healthy. It's like all the things that I've had to spend 36 years learning, they already know, and that's how they live their lives. And those are the kind of people that I attract today. So life is so awesome. I'm in the process right now. I'm in the process of, I'm engaged, so we'll get married probably like toward the end of the year. I'm in the process of selling my home. I have a huge home that's paid for, and it's, I don't know how that happened. I had $10,000 debt when I was sober. I had to go to Debtors Anonymous. And here I got a beautiful home, it's paid for, and I can sell that. And my boyfriend and I will be building a house on his property. He's got this beautiful property that has a, you know, view of the water and beautiful trees. I'm like, oh my God. Thank you, God. And I don't know how it happened. I just say, I thank God every day. I thank God for the people in my life. And I think there's just so much to be grateful for. And I have a friend in the program who we send each other, we do our gratitudes, three things every day that we're grateful for. And I had to pray before this meeting to God to help me to get out of the way. And because otherwise I could get into ego, this ego, I depend on you people. I depend on God. I depend on this program. And with the grace of God, I don't know. I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't ever walk back out. And I don't know why, but for that, I am grateful. And I have a sponsee who struggles. She goes in and out, and it's like, and my nephew Austin, I'm here because of my nephew Austin. I would have to pray for him. I would take him to meetings and pray, and he'd look at the big book, and he would want to get it, and then he'd go out. And I am just so grateful that he's here in this meeting. I'm here at this meeting thinking, oh, what did you get me into, Austin? But I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that he's here. And thank all of you for being here tonight and letting me share my experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.